Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert A. Heinlein continued. Cassette 10, Side 2. Ben, I'm afraid that you, and I too, lack the angelic innocence to practice the perfect morality those people live by. Ben looked startled. You think that sort of thing is moral? I meant that Jill doesn't know she is doing wrong. Mike's got her hornswoggled. And Mike doesn't know it's wrong either. He's the man from Mars. He didn't get a fair start. Jubal frowned. Yes, I think what those people, the entire nest, not just our kids, are doing is moral. I haven't examined details, but yes, all of it. Bacchanalia, unashamed swapping, communal living, an anarchistic code, everything. Jubal, you astound me. If you feel that way, why don't you join them? They want you. They'll hold a jubilee. Dawn is waiting to kiss your feet and serve you. I wasn't exaggerating. Jubal sighed. No. 50 years ago, but now, Ben, my brother, the capacity for such innocence is no longer in me. I've been too long wedded to my own brand of evil and hopelessness to be cleansed in their water of life and become innocent again. If I ever was. Mike thinks you have this innocence. He doesn't call it that. In full measure now. Dawn told me, speaking ex officio. Then I would not disillusion him. Mike sees his own reflection. I am, by profession, a mirror. Jubal, you're chicken. Precisely, sir. But my worry is not over their morals, the dangers to them from outside. Oh, they're in no trouble that way. You think so? If you dye a monkey pink and shove him into a cage of brown monkeys, they'll tear him to pieces. Those innocents are courting martyrdom. Aren't you being rather melodramatic, Jubal? Jubal glared. If I am, sir, does that make my words less weighty? Saints have burned at stakes ere this. Would you dismiss their holy anguish as melodrama? I didn't mean to get your back up. I simply meant that they aren't in that sort of danger. After all, this isn't the Dark Ages. Jubal blinked. Really? I hadn't noticed the change. Ben, this pattern has been offered to a naughty world many times, and the world has always crushed it. The Oneida colony was much like Mike's nest. It lasted a while, but out in the country, not many neighbors. Oh, take the early Christians. Anarchy, communism, group marriage, even that kiss of brotherhood. Mike has borrowed a lot from them. If he picked up that kiss of brotherhood from them, I would expect men to kiss men. Ben looked sheepish. I held out on you. But it's not a pansy gesture. Nor was it with the early Christians. Do you think I'm a fool? No comment. Thank you. I wouldn't advise anyone to offer the kiss of brotherhood to the pastor of some boulevard church today. Primitive Christianity is no more. Over and again, it's been the same sad story. A plan for perfect sharing and perfect love. Glorious hopes and high ideals. Then persecution and failure. Jubal sighed again. I've been fretting about Mike. Now I'm worried about them all. How do you think I feel? Jubal, I can't accept your sweetness and light theory. What they are doing is wrong. It's that last incident that sticks in your craw. Not entirely. Mostly. Ben, the ethics of sex is a thorny problem. Each of us is forced to grope for a solution he can live with in the face of a preposterous, unworkable, and evil code of so-called morals. Most of us know the code is wrong. Almost everybody breaks it. But we pay Danegeld by feeling guilty and giving lip service. Willy-nilly, the code rides us, dead and stinking, an albatross around the neck. You too, Ben. You fancy yourself a free soul and break that evil code. But faced with a problem in sexual ethics new to you, you tested it against the same Judeo-Christian code. So automatically your stomach did flip-flops, and you think that proves you're right and they're wrong. Faw! I'd as lief use trial by ordeal. All your stomach can reflect is prejudice trained into you before you acquired reason. What about your stomach? Mine is stupid, too, but I don't let it rule my brain. I see the beauty of Mike's attempt to devise an ideal ethic and applaud his recognition that such must start by junking the present sexual code and starting fresh. Most philosophers haven't the courage for this. They swallow the basics of the present code, monogamy, family pattern, continence, body taboos, conventional restrictions on intercourse, and so forth. then fiddle with details. Even such piffle as discussing whether the female breast is an obscene sight. But mostly they debate how we can be made to obey this code, ignoring the evidence that most tragedies they see around them are rooted in the code itself, rather than in failure to abide by it. Now comes the man from Mars, looks at this sacrosanct code with a fresh viewpoint, and rejects it. I don't know the details of Mike's code, but it clearly violates laws of every major nation and would outrage right-thinking people of every major faith, and most agnostics and atheists, too. Yet this poor boy, Jubal, he is not a boy. He's a man. Is he a man? This poor ersatz Martian is saying that sex is a way to be happy. Sex should be a means of happiness. Ben, the worst thing about sex is that we use it to hurt each other. It ought never to hurt. It should bring happiness, or at least pleasure. The code says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. The result? Reluctant chastity, adultery, jealousy, bitterness, blows, and sometimes murder, broken homes, and twisted children, and furtive little passes degrading to woman and man. Is this commandment ever obeyed? If a man swore on his own Bible that he refrained from coveting his neighbor's wife because the code forbade it, I would suspect either self-deception or subnormal sexuality. Any man virile enough to sire a child has coveted many women, whether he acts or not. Now comes Mike and says, there is no need to covet my wife. Love her. There's no limit to her love. We have everything to gain and nothing to lose but fear and guilt and hatred and jealousy. The proposition is incredible. So far as I recall, only pre-civilization Eskimos were this naive, and they were so isolated that they were almost men from Mars themselves. But we gave them our virtues, and now they have chastity and adultery just like the rest of us. Ben, what did they gain? I wouldn't care to be an Eskimo. Nor I. Spoiled fish makes me bilious. I had in mind soap and water. I guess I'm effete. Me too, Ben. I was born in a house with no more plumbing than an igloo. I prefer the present. Nevertheless, Eskimos were invariably described as the happiest people on earth. Any unhappiness they suffered was not through jealousy. They didn't have a word for it. They borrowed spouses for convenience and fun. It did not make them unhappy. So who's loony? Look at this glum world around you, then tell me, did Mike's disciples seem happier or unhappier than other people? I didn't talk to them all, Jubal, but yes, they're happy. So happy they seem slap happy. There's a catch in it somewhere. Maybe you were the catch. How? It's a pity your tastes canalized so young. Even 3 days of what you offered would be something to treasure when you reach my age. And you young idiot, let jealousy chase you away. At your age, I would have gone Eskimo. Why, I'm so vicariously vexed that my only consolation is the sour certainty that you will regret it. Age does not bring wisdom, Ben, but it does give perspective. And the saddest sight of all is to see far behind you temptations you've resisted. I have such regrets. But nothing to the whopper you will suffer. Quit rubbing it in. Heavens, man! Or are you a mouse? I'm trying to goad you. Why are you moaning to an old man? When you should be heading for the nest like a homing pigeon. Hell, if I were even 20 years younger, I'd join Mike's church myself. Lay off, Jubal. What do you really think of Mike's church? You said it was just a discipline. Yes and no. It is supposed to be truth with a capital T, as Mike got it from the Martian old ones. The old ones, eh? To me, they're hogwash. Mike believes in them. Ben, I once knew a manufacturer who believed that he consulted the ghost of Alexander Hamilton. However, damn it, why must I be the devil's advocate? What's biting you now? Ben, the foulest sinner of all is the hypocrite who makes a racket of religion. But we must give the devil his due. Mike does believe, and is teaching the truth as he sees it. As for his old ones, I don't know that they don't exist. I simply find the idea hard to swallow. As for his Thou Art God creed, it is neither more nor less credible than any other. Come Judgment Day, if they hold it, we may find that Mumbo Jumbo, the god of the Congo, was big boss all along. Oh, for heaven's sake, Jubal. All names belong in the hat, Ben. Man is so built that he cannot imagine his own death. This leads to endless invention of religions. While this conviction by no means proves immortality to be a fact, questions generated by it are overwhelmingly important. the nature of life, how ego hooks into the body, the problem of ego itself, and why each ego seems to be the center of the universe. The purpose of life, the purpose of the universe, these are paramount questions. Ben, they can never be trivial. Science hasn't solved them. And who am I to sneer at religions for trying, no matter how unconvincingly to me? Old mumbo-jumbo may eat me yet. I can't rule him out because he owns no fancy cathedrals, nor can I rule out one God-struck boy leading a sex cult in an upholstered attic. He might be the Messiah. The only religious opinion I feel sure of is this. Self-awareness is not just a bunch of amino acids bumping together. Phew, Jubal, you should have been a preacher. Missed it by luck. If Mike can show us a better way to run this fouled-up planet, his sex life needs no vindication. Geniuses are justifiably contemptuous of lesser opinion and always indifferent to sexual customs of the tribe. They make their own rules. Mike is a genius, so he ignores Mrs. Grundy and diddles to suit himself. But from a theological standpoint, Mike's sexual behavior is as orthodox as Santa Claus. He preaches that all living creatures are collectively God, which makes Mike and his disciples the only self-aware gods on this planet, which rates him union card by all the rules for godding. Those rules always permit God's sexual freedom, limited only by their own judgment. You want proof? Leda and the swan, Europa and the bull, Osiris, Isis, and Horus? The incredible incests of the Norse gods? I won't cite Eastern religions. Their gods do things that a mink breeder wouldn't tolerate. But look at the relations of the Trinity in One, of the most widely respected Western religion. The only way that religion's precepts can be reconciled with the inner relations of what purports to be a monotheos is by concluding that breeding rules for deity are not the rules for mortals. But most people never think about it. They seal it off and mark it holy, do not disturb. One must allow Mike any dispensation granted other gods. One god alone splits into at least two parts and breeds. Not just Jehovah, they all do it. A group of gods will breed like rabbits and with as little regard for human proprieties. Once Mike entered the godding business, orgies were as predictable as sunrise. So forget the standards of Podunk and judge them by Olympian morals. Jubal glowered. Ben, to understand this, you must start by conceding their sincerity. Oh, I do. It's just that, do you? You start by assuming that they must be wrong, judging them by that very code you reject. Try logic instead. Ben, this growing closer by sexual union, this plurality into unity, logically has no place for monogamy. Since shared by all sexual congress is basic to this creed, a fact that your account makes crystal clear, why expect it to be hidden? One hides what one is ashamed of. But they are not ashamed. They glory in it. To duck behind closed doors would be a sop to the very code they have rejected. Or it would shout aloud that you were an outsider who should never have been admitted in the first place. Maybe I shouldn't have been. Obviously you shouldn't have been. Mike clearly had misgivings. But Jillian insisted. Eh? That only makes it worse. How? She wanted you to be one of them in all fullness, as Mike would say. She loves you and is not jealous of you. But you are jealous of her. And while you claim to love her, your behavior doesn't show it. Damn it, I do love her. So, as may be, you clearly did not understand the Olympian honor you were being offered. I guess I didn't, Ben conceded glumly. I'm going to offer you a way out. You wondered how Mike got rid of his clothes. I'll tell you. How? A miracle. Oh, for God's sake. Could be. $1,000 says it was a miracle. Go ask Mike. Get him to show you. Then send me the money. Hell, Jubal, I don't want to take your money. You won't. Bet. Jubal, you go see what the score is. I can't go back. They'll take you back with open arms and never ask why you left. $1,000 on that prediction, too. Ben, you were there less than 24 hours. Did you give them the careful investigation that you give something smelly in public life before you blasted? But did you? No, but, oh, for God's sake, Ben, you claim to love Jill, yet you won't give her the fair shake you give a crooked politician. Not a tenth the effort she made to help you when you were in trouble. Where would you be if she had made so feeble a try? Roasting in hell, most likely. You're bitching about friendly fornication. Do you know what I'm worried about? What? Christ was crucified for preaching without a police permit. Sweat over that instead. Caxton chewed a thumb and said nothing. Then stood up suddenly. I'm on my way. After lunch. Now. 24 hours later, Ben wired Jubal $2,000. When, after a week, Jubal received no other message, he sent a stat, care of Ben's office. What the hell are you doing? The answer was somewhat delayed. Studying Martian. Aqua fraternally yours, Ben. Part 5. His Happy Destiny. Chapter 34. Foster looked up from work in progress.
Junior?
Sir. That youngster you wanted? He's available now. The Martians have released him. Digby looked puzzled. I'm sorry. There was some young creature toward whom I have a duty? Foster smiled angelically. Miracles were never necessary. In truth, the pseudo-concept miracle was self-contradicting. But these young fellows always had to learn it for themselves. Never mind, he said gently. It's a minor martyrdom, and I'll guard it myself. And, Junior?
Sir,
call me Foz, please. Ceremony is all right in the field, but we don't need it in the studio. And remind me not to call you Junior. You made a very nice record on that temporary duty assignment. Which name do you like to be called? His assistant blinked.
I have another name?
Thousands. Do you have a preference?
Why, I really don't recall it this eon.
Well, would you like to be called Digby?
Yes. That's a very nice name.
Thanks.
Don't thank me.
You earned it. Archangel Foster turned back to his work, not forgetting the minor duty he had assumed. Briefly, he considered how this cup might be taken from little Patricia, then chided himself for such unprofessional, almost human thought. Mercy was not possible in an angel. Angelic compassion left no room for it. The Martian Old Ones had reached an elegant trial solution to their major aesthetic problem and put it aside for a few filled threes to let it generate new problems, at which time, unhurriedly and almost absent-mindedly, the alien nestling which they had returned to his proper world was tapped of what he had learned of his people and dropped after cherishing, since he was of no further interest to their purposes. They took the data he had accumulated and, with a view to testing that trial solution, began to work toward considering an inquiry leading to an investigation of aesthetic parameters involved in the possibility of the artistic necessity of destroying Earth. But much waiting would be before fullness would grok decision. The Daibutsu at Kamakura was again washed by a giant wave secondary to a seismic disturbance 280 kilometers off Honshu. The wave killed 13,000 people and lodged a male infant high in the Buddha's image interior, where it was found and succored by surviving monks. This infant lived 97 Terran years after the disaster that wiped out his family and produced no progeny nor anything of note aside from a reputation for sustained belching. Cynthia Duchess entered a nunnery with all benefits of modern publicity and left without fanfare 3 days later. Ex-Secretary General Douglas suffered a stroke which impaired the use of his left hand, but not his ability to conserve assets entrusted to him. Lunar Enterprises Limited published a prospectus on a bond issue for the wholly-owned subsidiary Ares Chandler Corporation. The Lyle Drive exploratory vessel Mary Jane Smith landed on Pluto. Fraser, Colorado, reported the coldest February of its recorded history. Bishop Ox Tongue at the new Grand Avenue Temple preached on the text, Matthew 24:24, "For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that, if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect." He made clear that his diatribe did not refer to Mormons, Christian Scientists, Roman Catholics, nor Fosterites, especially not the last, nor to any fellow travelers whose good works counted more than inconsequential differences in creed or ritual, but solely to upstart heretics who were seducing faithful contributors away from the faiths of their fathers. In a subtropical resort city in the same nation, three complainants swore on information charging public lewdness on the part of a pastor, three of his assistants, and John Doe, Mary Rowe et al., plus charges of running a disorderly house and contributing to delinquency of minors.
The county attorney had no interest in prosecuting, as he had on file a dozen like it. Complaining witnesses always failed to appear at arraignment. He pointed this out. Their spokesman said, "You'll have plenty of backing this time. Supreme Bishop Short is determined that this Antichrist shall flourish no longer." The prosecutor was not interested in Antichrists, but there was a primary coming up. "Well, just remember, I can't do much without backing." "You'll have it." Dr. Jubal Harshaw was not aware of this incident, but knew of too many others for peace of mind. He had succumbed to that most insidious vice, the news. Thus far, he had merely subscribed to a clipping service instructed for Man from Mars, V.M. Smith, Church of All Worlds, and Ben Caxton. But the monkey was on his back. Twice lately, he fought off an impulse to order Larry to set up the babble box. Damn it, why couldn't those kids tape him an occasional letter, instead of letting him worry? "Front." Anne came in, but he continued to stare out at snow and an empty swimming pool. "Anne," he said, "rent us a tropical atoll and put this mausoleum up for sale."
"Yes, boss."
"But get a lease before you hand this back to the Indians. I will not put up with hotels. How long has it been since I wrote pay copy?"
43 days.
"Let that be a lesson to you. Begin, Death Song of a Woods Colt. The depths of winter longing are ice within my heart. The shards of broken covenants lie sharp against my soul. The wraiths of long-lost ecstasy still keep us two apart. The sullen winds of bitterness still keen from turn to pole. The scars and twisted tendons, the stumps of struck-off limbs, the aching pit of hunger and throb of unset bone, my sanded, burning eyeballs, as light within them dims, add nothing to the torment of lying here alone. The shimmering flames of fever trace out your blessed face. My broken eardrums echo, yet your voice inside my head. I do not fear the darkness that comes to me apace. I only dread the loss of you that comes when I am dead." "There," he added briskly. "Sign it Louisa M. Alcott and send it to Togetherness Magazine."
"Boss, is that your idea of pay copy?"
"Huh?" "It will be worth something later. Put it on file, and my literary executor can use it to help settle death duties. That's the catch in artistic pursuits. The best work is worth most after the workman can't be paid. The literary life, dreck. It consists in scratching the cat till it purrs."
"Poor Jubal. Nobody ever feels sorry for him. So he has to feel sorry for himself."
"Sarcasm yet. No wonder I don't get any work done."
"Not sarcasm, boss. Only the wearer knows where the shoe pinches."
"My apologies. All right, here's pay copy. Title, One for the Road. There's amnesia in a hangknot and comfort in the axe, but the simple way of poison will make your nerves relax. There's surcease in a gunshot and sleep that comes from racks, but a handy draft of poison avoids the harshest tax. You find rest upon the hot squat, or gas can give you packs, but the closest corner chemist has peace in packaged stacks. There's refuge in the church lot when you tire of facing facts, and the smoothest route is poison prescribed by kindly quacks. Chorus. With an ugh and a groan and a kick of the heels, death comes quiet or it comes with squeals, but the pleasantest place to find your end is a cup of cheer from the hand of a friend."
"Jubal," Anne said worriedly, "is your stomach upset?"
"Always."
"That's for file, too?"
"Huh? As for the New Yorker."
"They'll bounce it."
"They'll buy it. It's morbid. They'll buy it."
"And besides, there's something wrong with the scansion."
"Of course. You have to give an editor something to change. Or he gets frustrated. After he pees in it, he likes the flavor better, so he buys it. My dear, I was avoiding honest work before you were born. Don't teach Grandpa how to suck eggs. Or would you rather I nursed Abby while you turn out copy? Hey, it's Abigail's feeding time. You weren't front. Dorcas is front."
"It won't hurt Abby to wait. Dorcas is lying down. Morning sickness."
"Nonsense. And I can spot pregnancy 2 weeks before a rabbit can, and you know it."
"Jubal, you let her be. She's scared she didn't catch, and she wants to think she did as long as possible. Don't you know anything about women?"
Come to think about it, no. All right, I won't heckle her. Why didn't you bring our baby angel and nurse her here?"
"I'm glad I didn't. She might have understood what you were saying."
"So I corrupt babies, do I?"
"She's too young to see the marshmallow syrup underneath, boss." "But you don't do any work if I bring her. You just play with her."
"Can you think of a better way of enriching empty hours?"
"Jubal, I appreciate the fact that you are dotty over my daughter. I think she's pretty nice myself. that you've been spending all your time either playing with Abby or moping.
How soon do we go on relief?
That's not the point. If you don't crank out stories, you get spiritually constipated. It's reached the point where Dorcas and Larry and I are biting our nails. When you yell front, we jitter with relief, but it's always a false alarm.
If there's money to meet the bills, what are you worried about?
What are you worried about, boss? Jubal considered it.
Should he tell her?
Any doubts as to the paternity of Abigail had been settled in his mind in her naming. Anne had wavered between Abigail and Zenobia, then had loaded the infant with both. Anne never mentioned the meanings of those names. Presumably she did not know that he knew them. Anne went on firmly. You're not fooling anyone, Jubal. Dorcas and Larry and I all know that Mike can take care of himself, but you've been so frenetic about it.
Frenetic? Me?
Larry set up the tank in his room, and one of us has been catching the news every broadcast. Not because we are worried, except about you. But when Mike gets into the news, and of course he does, we know it before the silly clippings reach you. I wish you had quit reading them.
How do you know about any clippings? I went to a lot of trouble to see that you didn't.
Boss, she said in a tired voice, somebody has to dispose of the trash. Do you think Larry can't read?
So, that confounded Dubliette hasn't worked right since Duke left. Damn it, nothing has.
Just send word to Mike. Duke will show up at once.
You know I can't do that.
It graveled him that what she said was almost certainly true, and the thought was followed by bitter suspicion.
Anne, are you still here because Mike told you to?
She answered promptly. I am here because I wish to be.
I'm not sure that's responsive.
Jubal, sometimes I wish you were small enough to spank. May I finish what I was saying?
You have the floor.
Would any of them be here? Would Miriam have married Stinky and gone off to Beirut if Mike had not approved? The name Fatima Michelle might be an acknowledgement of her adopted faith, plus her husband's wish to compliment his closest friend. Or it might be code as explicit as Baby Abby's double name. If so, did Stinky wear his antlers unaware? Or with serene pride, as Joseph was alleged to have done? It must be concluded that Stinky knew the minutes of his houri. Water brothership permitted no omission so important. If it was important, which as a physician and agnostic, Jubal doubted. But to them, it would be. You aren't listening.
Sorry. Wool gathering.
And stop it, you nasty old man. Reading meanings into names that mothers give their children. Next you'll be taking up numerology, then astrology, then spiritualism, until senility has progressed so far that all there is left is custodial treatment for a hulk too dim-witted to discorporate in dignity. Go to locked drawer 9 in the clinic, code Lethe, and use 2 grains, although 1 is more than enough. There's no need for those clippings because we check the news about Mike. And Ben has given us a water promise to let us know any private news we need at once. But Jubal, Mike can't be hurt. If you would visit the nest as we 3 have, you would know this.
I have never been invited.
We didn't have invitations either. Nobody has to have an invitation to his own home. You're making excuses, Jubal. Ben urged you to, and both Dawn and Duke sent word.
Mike hasn't invited me.
Boss, that nest belongs to me and to you quite as much as it does to Mike. Mike is first among equals, as you are here. Is this Abby's home?
Happens, he answered. That title vests in her, with lifetime tenancy for me.
Jubal had changed his will, knowing that Mike's will made it unnecessary to provide for any water brother of Mike's, but not being sure of the water status of this nestling, save that she was unusually wet, he had made redispositions in her favor, and in favor of descendants of certain others.
I hadn't intended to tell you, but there's no harm in your knowing.
Jubal, you've made me cry, and you've almost made me forget what I was saying, and I must say it. Mike would never hurry you, you know that. Igrocki is waiting for fullness, and Igrocki you are too.
Igrocki, you speak rightly.
All right. I think you are especially glum today because Mike has been arrested again, but that's happened many...
Arrested? I hadn't heard about this.
He added,
damn it, girl.
Jubal, Ben hasn't called, that's all we need to know. You know how many times Mike has been arrested. In the army, as a carny, other places, 6 times as a preacher. He never hurts anybody, he lets them do it. They can never convict him, and he gets out as soon as he wishes.
What is it this time?
Oh, the usual nonsense. Public lewdness, statutory rape, conspiracy to defraud, keeping a disorderly house, contributing to the delinquency of minors, conspiracy to evade truancy laws.
Huh?
Their license to operate a parochial school was canceled. The kids didn't go back to public school. No matter, Jubal, none of it matters. The one thing they are technically guilty of can't be proved. Jubal, if you had seen the nest, you would know that even the FDS couldn't sneak a spy eye into it. So relax. After a lot of publicity, charges will be dropped, and crowds will be bigger than ever.
Hmm. Man, does Mike rig these persecutions himself?
She looked startled. Why, I never considered the possibility, Jubal. Mike can't lie, you know.
Does it involve lying? Suppose he planted true rumors, but ones that can't be proved in court.
Do you think Michael would do that?
I don't know. I do know that the slickest way to lie is to tell the right amount of truth, then shut up. It wouldn't be the first time the persecution has been courted for its headline value. All right, I'll forget it, unless it turns out he can't handle it. Are you still front?
If you can refrain from chucking Abby under the chin and saying coochie coo and similar uncommercial noises, I'll fetch her. Otherwise, I'd better tell Dorcas to get up.
Bring in Abby. I'm going to make an honest effort to make commercial noises. A brand new plot, known as Boy Meets Girl.
Say, that's a good one, boss. I wonder why nobody thought of it before. Half a sec.
She hurried out.
Jubal did restrain himself. Less than 1 minute of uncommercial activity. Just enough to invoke Abigail's heavenly smile. Then Anne settled back and let the infant nurse.
Title, he began. Girls like boys, only more so. Begin. Henry M. Havisham IV had been carefully reared. He believed that there were only two kinds of girls, those in his presence and those who were not. He vastly preferred the latter sort, especially when they stayed that way. Paragraph. He had not been introduced to the young lady who fell into his lap, and he did not consider a common disaster as equivalent to a formal intro. What the hell do you want?
Boss, said Larry.
Get out, close the door, and...
Boss, Mike's church is burned down.
They made a disorderly rout for Larry's room. Jubal a half-length behind Larry at the turn, and with 11 pounds up, closing rapidly. Dorcas trailed, through being late out the gate. The racket wakened her.
Midnight last night, you were viewing what was the main entrance of the cult's temple, as it appeared immediately after the explosion. This is your neighborly newsman for New World Networks with your mid-morning roundup. Stay switched to this pitch for dirt that's alert. And now a moment for your sponsor.
The scene shimmered out, and Mead close shot of a lovely housewife replaced with Dolly in.
Damn, Larry, unplug that contraption and wheel it into the study. Anne, no, Dorcas, phone Ben.
Anne protested.
You know the temple never had a telephone. How can she?
Then have somebody chase over and... No, the temple wouldn't have anybody. Call the police chief there. No, the district attorney. The last you heard, Mike was in jail?
That's right.
I hope he still is. And the others, too.
So do I. Dorcas, take Abby. I'll do it.
As they returned to the study, the phone was signaling, demanding hush and scramble. Jubal cursed and set the combo, intending to blast whoever it was off the frequency. It was Ben Caxton.
Hi, Jubal.
Ben, what the hell's the situation?
I see you've had the news. That's why I called. Everything is under control.
What about the fire? Anybody hurt?
No damage. Mike says to tell you,
no damage. I just saw a shot of it. It looked like a total.
Oh, that. Ben shrugged. Jubal, please listen. I've got other calls to make. You aren't the only person who needs reassurance. But Mike said to call you first.
Very well, sir.
Nobody hurt? Nobody even scorched. Oh, a couple of million in property damage. The place was choked with experiences. Mike planned to abandon it soon. Yes, it was fireproof. But anything will burn with enough gasoline and dynamite.
Incendiary job, huh?
Please, Jubal. They had arrested 8 of us. All they could catch of the 9th Circle. John Doe warrants, mostly. Mike had us bailed out in a couple of hours, except himself. He's in the Hooskow.
I'll be right there.
Take it easy. Mike says for you to come if you want to, but there's no need for it.
I agree.
The fire was set last night while the temple was empty. Everything canceled because of the arrests. Empty, that is, except for the nest. All of us in town except Mike were in the innermost temple holding a sharing water in his honor when the explosion and fire were set off, so we adjourned to an emergency nest.
From the looks of it, you were lucky to get out.
We were cut off, Jubal. We're all dead.
What?
We're all listed as dead or missing. You see, nobody left the building after that Holocaust started, by any known exit.
A priest's hole?
Jubal, Mike has methods for such things, and I'm not going to discuss them over the phone.
You said he was in jail?
So I did. He still is.
But
that's enough. If you come, don't go to the temple. It's kaput. I'm not going to tell you where we are, and I'm not calling from there. If you come, and I see no point in it, there's nothing you can do. Just come as you ordinarily would. We'll find you.
But that's all.
Goodbye. And Dorcas Larry, and you too, Jubal, and the baby, share water. Thou art God.
The screen went blank.
Jubal swore.
I knew it. That's what comes of mucking around with religion. Dorcas, get me a taxi. And
no, finish feeding your child.
Larry, pack me a bag. And I want most of the iron money. And Larry can go tomorrow and replenish the supply.
Boss, protested Larry.
We're all going.
Certainly we are,
Ann agreed crisply.
Pipe down, Ann. Close your mouth, Dorcas. This is not a time when women have the vote. That city is the firing line, and anything can happen. Larry, you stay here and protect two women and a baby. Forget about going to the bank. You won't need cash, because none of you is to stir off the place until I'm back. Somebody's playing rough, and there's enough hookup between this house and that church that they might play rough here, too. Larry, floodlights all night. Heat up the fence. Don't hesitate to shoot. And don't be slow about getting everybody into the vault if necessary. Put Abby's crib there at once. Now get with it. I gotta change clothes.
30 minutes later, Jubal was alone in his suite. Larry called up.
Boss, taxi landing.
Be right down,
he called back. Then turned to look at the fallen caryatid. His eyes were filled with tears. He said softly,
You tried, didn't you, youngster? But that stone was always too heavy. Too heavy for anyone.
Gently he touched a hand of the crumpled figure, turned, and left. Chapter 35. The taxi did what Jubal expected of machinery, developed trouble, and homed for maintenance. Jubal wound up in New York, farther from his goal than ever. He found that he could make better time by commercial schedule than by any available charter. He arrived hours late, having spent the time cooped up with strangers and watching stereo. He saw an insert of Supreme Bishop Short proclaiming a holy war against the Antichrist, i.e. Mike, and he saw many shots of an utterly ruined building. He failed to see how any had escaped alive. Augustus Greaves viewed with alarm everything about it, but pointed out that, in every spite-fence quarrel, one neighbor supplies the incitements, and in his weasel-worded opinion the so-called man from Mars was at fault. At last, Jubal stood on a municipal landing flat, sweltering in winter clothes, noted that palm trees still looked like a poor grade of feather duster, regarded bleakly the sea beyond, thinking that it was a dirty, unstable mass contaminated with grapefruit shells and human excrement, and wondered what to do. A man wearing a uniform cap approached.
Taxi, sir? Yes.
He could go to a hotel, call in the press, and give an interview that would publicize his whereabouts.
This way, sir.
The cabbie led him to a battered yellow cab. As he put his bag in after Jubal, he said quietly,
I offer you water.
Eh? Never thirst.
Thou art God.
The cab pilot sealed the door and got into his own compartment. They wound up on one wing of a big beach hotel, a private four-car space, the hotel's landing flat being on another wing. The pilot set the cab to home in alone, took Jubal's bag, and escorted him in.
You couldn't have come in via the lobby, he said, as the foyer on this floor is filled with cobras, so if you go down to the street, be sure to ask somebody, me or anybody. I'm Tim.
I'm Jubal Harshaw.
I know, Brother Jubal.
In this way, mind your step. They entered a suite of the large, extreme luxury sort, and on into a bedroom with bath. Tim said,
This is yours.
Put Jubal's bag down and left. On a table, Jubal found water, glasses, ice cubes, and brandy, his preferred brand. He mixed himself a quick one, sipped it, and sighed, took off his winter jacket. A woman came in bearing a tray of sandwiches. Her dress Jubal took to be the uniform of a hotel chambermaid, since it was unlike the shorts, halters, sarongs, and other ways to display rather than conceal that characterized this resort. But she smiled at him and said,
Drink deep and never thirst, our brother.
Put the tray down, went into his bath and started a tub, then checked around in bath and in bedroom.
Is there anything you need, Jubal?
Me? Oh, no, everything is fine. Is Ben Caxton around?
Yes, he said you would want to bathe and get comfortable first. If you want anything, just say so. Ask anyone. Or ask for me. I'm Patty.
Oh, the life of Archangel Foster.
She dimpled, and suddenly was much younger than the 30-ish Jubal had guessed.
Yes.
I'd like very much to see it. I'm interested in religious art.
Now? No, Igrok, you want your bath. Unless you'd like help.
Jubal recalled that his tattooed Japanese friend had made many times the same offer. But he simply wanted to wash away the stink and get into summer clothes.
No, thank you, Patty. But I do want to see them, at your convenience.
Any time. There's no hurry.
She left, unhurried, but moving very quickly. Jubal refrained from lounging. Shortly, he was checking through what Larry had packed and grunted with annoyance to find no summer-weight slacks. He settled for sandals, shorts, and a bright shirt, which made him look like a paint-splashed emu and accented his hairy, thinning legs. But Jubal had ceased worrying about such decades earlier. It would do, until he needed to go out on the street or into court. Did the Bar Association here have reciprocity with Pennsylvania? He found his way into a large living room, having that impersonal quality of hotel accommodations. Several people were watching the largest stereovision tank Jubal had ever seen outside a theater. One glanced up, said, "Hi, Jubal," and came toward him.
"Hi, Ben. What's the situation? Is Mike still in jail?"
"Oh, no, he got out shortly after I talked to you."
"Is the preliminary hearing set?"
Ben smiled.
"It's not that way, Jubal. Mike wasn't released. He escaped."
Jubal looked disgusted.
"What a silly thing to do. Now the case will be 8 times as difficult."
"Jubal, I told you not to worry. The rest of us are presumed dead, and Mike is missing. We're through with this city. It doesn't matter, we'll go elsewhere."
"They'll extradite him."
"Never fear, they won't."
"Well, where is he? I must talk to him."
"He's a couple of rooms down from you, but he's withdrawn in meditation. He left word to tell you to take no action." "You can talk to him if you insist. Chill will call him out of it, but I don't recommend it. There's no hurry."
Jubal was damnably eager to talk to Mike, and chew him out for getting into such a mess.